Hello and welcome to this week's Comic Roast. I am your host, Scott. You can find me on Twitter at XOrsonX. You can also find me on Snapchat at XOrsonX and Instagram at Slevin77 if you are so inclined. I am here today with Brian, you can find on Twitter at PureRockFury. And we're here with Chris, you can find on Twitter at SkateXEdge. Damien is going to be pretty busy for the next couple of weeks, so we may not see him for till next year, but fingers crossed that he'll be back shortly. And let's see, our number one for today is the grand duo of Scott Snyder and Jeff Lemire doing After Death number one, and our over-under for the week is Fears. This ought to be a little interesting, but yeah, other than that, don't forget to check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/reviewandroast, and head to reviewandroast.com to check out all of our reviews for movies and TV shows and all the other good stuffs. And oh yeah, you can buy movie tickets there, so you know you're going to go to the movies anyway. You might as well get your tickets from us, because you know we need some help, and you like to help. That's what I hear. It's the season for the reason, right? Is that how it goes?
Season for a reason?
Yeah.
He's a transmitter. Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now?
Okay, so everyone's probably noticed we've been gone for about 2 weeks now. Obviously, last week was Thanksgiving, so we hope you all had a great holiday. I won't get into mine. The week before that, you know, just scheduling issues. It's getting to be the busy time of the year for most people, so we're back and we're ready to attack. So I'm on vacation this week, which is super duper awesome. So let me run down my vacation plans, and then I'll tell you what actually happened.
Final Fantasy.
Right, exactly. I based this entire vacation around the fact that Final Fantasy 15 came out on Tuesday. So I'm like, sweet, because I'll take Monday, and I'll just like do a bunch of yard work. I'll cut the grass one last time. I'll pull all the weeds. I'll clean the house. I'll do lawn. I mean, everything was going to get done on Monday.
House looks amazing, by the way.
It's great downstairs.
Yeah, nothing happened.
Well, I'm getting there. So not only was it raining and terrible all day on Monday, so there goes all the yard work. Boo-hoo on that. Then, about an hour into my cleaning marathon, I tweaked my back. And so I cleaned for about a good 3 or 4 hours on Monday, and then, you know, it wasn't like it was so bad that I couldn't move, but it was bad enough to where I could feel that I was in pain. So then, fast forward to Tuesday. Okay, the game's going to be here. I pre-ordered on Amazon. I'm ready to go. I put all my codes in on the PlayStation Store to download all the cool stuff. So I'm ready. I try to get out of bed, and I kind of just screamed and fell back into bed and had to like prepare for about 10 minutes before I was actually able to get out of bed because I was in so much pain. That happened again on Wednesday. But usually when I order something like this in a pre-order from Amazon, it's usually here by 10, maybe 11 o'clock in the morning. So I'm sitting here like an idiot, running to the door every 5 minutes, waiting for this thing to show up. It doesn't come until almost 3 o'clock, so I'm sitting here all day Tuesday like, oh my god, my life is worthless. But it finally came, and here we are, Thursday evening, so you figure I've had the game for about 48 hours, give or take, and I've maybe put in about 12 hours, which I think is pretty reasonable. Still went and did a little grocery shopping, had lunch with my sister and one of my nephews, and you know, got some other stuff done, read some comics, read some more of a book that I don't really want to read. But yeah, that's my vacation so far. Not 100% as planned, but still pretty close, outside of my old man out of shapeness that kicked in first thing Monday morning.
Sweet. I worked. Work rules. It actually doesn't, but whatever. I watched a pretty rad movie last night, though, called Two Men in Manhattan. It's a 1959 French noir film filmed in New York, which is kind of neat, because usually when I watch a foreign film, it's set in a foreign country. This is a foreign film set in America, so half the movie's in French, the other half the movie's in English, and it's kind of seamless, and it's a standard, like, there's a murder or there's a death and there's a mystery surrounding it. I won't give it away. Movie was pretty amazing. A lot of people seem to be down on it. It's made by Jean-Pierre Melville, who also made Les Samurai, and he also made Le Cercle Rouge, which I've yet to see, which I really want to see that. But Two Men in Manhattan, it's kind of a more of an obscure late 50s noir film, but man, it's pretty goddamn good. I was into it.
I like it.
There's nudity, which is weird because you think 50s, you think conservative America, but this is a French film, remember, even though it's set in New York, not an American film, and there's full-blown, not full-blown nudity, but there's nudity in it. And there's some pretty, for the time period, some pretty risque story choices.
I like it.
I won't get into the details. It's one of those movies, it's on Hulu, but it's only on there for like another 5 days, so I was like, fuck, I gotta get this thing in before it goes away. Because this isn't like something you just walk down to Target and grab. You got to like order the movie if you want it. So,
yeah,
I'd say if you haven't seen Two Men in Manhattan or whatever the French name of it is, totally see it. Damien's probably bought it on three different formats already because he's you know deep into it like that. He's seen Blast of Silence. I haven't, so I feel kind of stupid. But yeah, Two Men in Manhattan, totally worth seeing. And what else? I'm reading this really bitchin' hard case crime novel. Actually, it's written by Michael Crichton, the author of Jurassic Park. It was written in 1969 before he went under his actual name. It was under his pen name, John Lang. The book's called Zero Cool, and it's totally cool. It's about a radiologist who goes to Barcelona, and he gets caught up in this whole... I don't want to give it away, but there's basically a murder, and he gets tasked with doing the autopsy. He doesn't know how to do an autopsy, but he gets pretty much told at gunpoint, you are going to take this $50,000, and you're going to do this autopsy, and you're going to shut the fuck up. Pretty rad book. Totally into it. Zero Cool. Hard case crime. Go get it. Also has nudity.
I like how that's like a plus for you.
No, I think it's interesting to find books, movies, shows from that era. Because it really wasn't until the late 60s, early 70s that stuff became acceptable-ish, acceptable-adjacent. So it's just interesting to see how different the culture was then compared to now. That's all. It's not like, oh my god, nudity is the best. Nudity's pretty rad. Let's not pretend it's not, because it is pretty awesome. But it just, if it was an American, like for example, back to the movie for a minute, if it was an American movie, you know, if a guy ran across a dead body, he'd be like, oh, poppycock.
Yeah.
They would be more than happy to use, like, a racial epithet, but they're not really going to get, you know, down with any, like, boobs or butts because, oh, my God, the children. Because, you know, the N-word's fine, but not boobs. Whereas the French were like, yeah, fucking boobs, man. They're pretty cool. Here they are, boobs.
Well, no one likes to hide that stuff more than Americans. So shame people for something that has nothing to do with no reason to shame anyone, but
it's the Europeans, man. They're like way ahead of us, or they're way behind us in reverse.
That was bad.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. All right, I got nothing.
So, Chris, how's your last 3 weeks been?
All right,
that's pretty awesome.
I moved.
Oh, that's right.
Well, the last podcast we did, I was already here, so
and now you're there.
Yeah.
Wherever you go.
Do you want to give the listeners your address so they can send care packages?
Wherever you go, there you are.
No.
Oh, you know what else I did before we get into too much of stuff here? I finished season 2 of The Flash and season 4 of The Arrow. I'm just kicking some ass this week.
By not kicking any ass.
Well, the thing that sucks is neither one of you guys have watched either of those, so I can't really discuss my issues with them. But, you know, whatever.
I've watched Arrow and Flash. What are you talking about?
You have?
Dude, I've been watching them ever since they came out.
Well, all right then. I guess...
I'm ahead of you by miles, dude. What are you talking
about? Well, most people are. The only problem is Brian is not, so I can't really... No. I don't want to give much away. But I will anyway, because I want to. So here's my only real main issue, I guess. In season 4 of The Arrow, when they're... You know, towards the end when they keep meeting up with Damian Dark and they keep fighting him and blah, blah, blah. Why? I understand that one girl they brought in with the necklace who can turn like summon the power of the animals, whatever. I understand that. She's touching her artifact at all times. She draws power from it. Damien Dark's artifact is just in a basement somewhere. So why is he the only one that can draw power off of it? When we clearly saw in the past on the island that 2 to 3 people were drawing power from it. How come nobody has... You know what I'm saying? Like, did that not cross your mind? Or am I talking poppycock right now?
I never really gave it much thought.
Well, I am clearly... I have way more time on my hands than most people. Because the whole time I'm thinking, like, dude, I understand if, like, he was in possession of the idol, but he's not. It's just in the vicinity. So how come Oliver can't draw from it? How come, you know, somebody else can't come and draw from it? Doesn't make any sense. They got a little too mystical, magical in season 4 for me. It was still good, don't get me wrong. But, I don't know, whatever.
That's how they lead into Legends of Tomorrow. I'm guessing. I've been watching Delocated again, so I'm way off the comic book TV show thing right now.
Well, now that I'm done with that, and I've finished New Girl for like the third time, I went, you saw when you walked in, I went back to just random Doctor Who episodes, because I don't really want to start anything else, although I did start that new Woody Allen show, that Prime Original, that Crisis in 6 Scenes or whatever. I watched the first episode of that a week or two ago, and it was just kind of eh, so I haven't gone back yet, but I'll probably finish it now that I have nothing else. Now that I'm completely just rambling. See what happens when we take 2 weeks off? I don't shut up.
I've had no desire to watch TV, really. I've been watching Parks and Rec. I've been watching The Office. And like I said, the only thing I've been, like, intentionally watching is Delocated again, because I got back into season 3, and it's... Because I keep seeing all these John Glazer has gear commercials, and it makes me sad that I can't watch that because I don't have stupid cable. So I've been getting my John Glazer fix with some Delocated action, which has totally been worth it, because season 3 of Delocated is way fucking funnier the third time around. Like Street Skins, I'm in tears now for some reason. Like, it was funny the first time, but now I see him put a potato skin on the sidewalk, and I start cackling like a maniac. Or the whole, like, I for some reason, bone phones just went, like, right over my head. But then when he handed his son the headphones and said, "Hey, these are the bone phones from when I got the ladies over," I was like, yes. John Glazer.
Well, all right, then. Should we do the number one now? I think we should. Are you still with us over there, Chris?
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, this was your pick. Am I correct?
It was Damien's pick, really.
This is true. This is true.
It was his pick. I just threw it out there, and he goes, "Oh, yeah, let's do that."
True that. So, okay. I guess technically we'll just call it a group pick, because
sure.
It was Damien, and he's not with us, and he didn't really pick it anyway. So who wants to give us a little rundown? Okay, so no one.
Let me see. How do I go about this? Well, I mean... I would assume with anyone that's into comics, if they hear Scott Snyder and Jeff Lemire doing a comic book, I'm assuming someone would have some really high expectations, as those two are pretty much seasoned vets with a good resume. When I first heard about it, I thought it was cool. I mean, it's not like it's after death. Basically what it is, I mean, they pretty much gave you the plot. It's someone has found a cure for dying. So I guess it's like a interesting little take on the whole zombie thing. Scott Snyder obviously wrote it. Jeff Lemire drew it. And I like his artwork. And I like the fact that this thing is like a magazine size. And the cover is, I don't know, what is that paper? Is that like velvet?
It's a vellum.
Yeah, it's nice.
It's a vellum. Obviously, yeah, it's a vellum cardstock.
Image went all out to,
present the book, I guess.
Right.
Put it.
Well, I was listening to an interview with Jeff Lemire on Word Balloon, and he said that they pretty much decided, rather than do a comic book, they were going to do more of what they referred to as an illustrated graphic novel, which they said was going to be kind of a hybrid of comic and actual novel, because Scott Snyder was getting ready to kind of put a little comic book work behind him for a while and work on a novel, and then they came up with this project instead, and that's kind of
yeah, I heard about this thing almost 2 years ago.
Yeah, it's been his outlet. Instead of just walking away from comics altogether, he decided to do this instead. So, because Scott Snyder actually, he started out as a short story writer, not as a comic book writer.
I did not know that, actually.
Yeah, he actually teaches writing courses at Sarah Lawrence College, I want to say. I could be wrong. He teaches writing courses at some college out east. Maybe it's Sarah Lawrence.
Okay.
I don't know. Either way.
Well, I do like the fact that it is not your everyday run-of-the-mill comic. It is like an illustrated graphic novel, I guess, if that's the way you want to put it. Almost looks like kind of a kid's book, but not really, because there's a lot of reading involved. I guess the reason why I'm having kind of a problem with it right now is because in the middle, where, like, you know, like, when you started the book, it's, you know, there's a couple pages to read, and it's talking about, like, the family on this trip in Florida. They decided to go to Florida. They see this green balloon, and they're, like, kind of following it, because they see, like, a bright, like, a flashing light that just, like, kind of like a beacon that just keeps flashing. And then it goes in to the comic portion of the book, but then it goes back to the, I guess, you know, the actual reading part, and that part kind of just threw me off track. I'm reading it. I'm going, what the fuck does this have to do with anything?
What's the main character's name? Help me out here.
Jonah Cook. Sorry.
Right, okay.
Like, trying to pull it, yeah.
So
it starts off when he's like, I don't know, he's six, and then it goes to, like, in the comic portion, he's like 40, I think, maybe older.
He's definitely older. Time works a lot differently in the, I guess, the present time of this book, which is when he's an old man, because he's, you know, when he was leaving the one job going to the other, he was explaining
that. Oh, that's right. He said he'd been there for like 50 years.
Yeah. So I'm not sure exactly what's going on, because it is only part one of a two-part series, I believe it's going to be.
It's a three-part.
Is it three? Damn it.
Yeah.
They better be current with it then, because I'm not going to wait 6 months to read part two. But
right. I'll forget it all.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, a lot of the reading part was a lot of it was the history of when Jonah was a kid, and basically what happened on this vacation that you were talking about is the balloon had something to do with a prize, and while his dad was on the phone,
that's right,
and the mother collapsed. And, you know, over the next course of a few weeks, you know, she collapsed a few more times. The doctors couldn't figure out why. And basically, being a kid, he had this fear that pretty much any time, any place could be the end of it for his mom. So he was doing the best he could as a child to kind of record all of his family moments, whether it be through a journal or a tape recorder that he stole, because he realized then and there that one day my mom's not going to be here, and it could be any time, because they don't know what's wrong. So that's the majority of the reading that goes on in the past. The present, where he's an older gentleman, probably, you know, in 40s, 50s, whatever. But the way they talk, it seems to me like the majority of the planet is dead and or dying already, and even so much as the atmosphere seems to be toxic in certain places. And now he's headed off to some laboratory or something to do a post there. But, like, I think it overlooks a dying town or a dead town, and the crew went out years ago to do research, and they stopped reporting back shortly after they left, but there's some connection there between him and the group that went out, because the lady who was doing the watch when he got there was like, hey, I hope you're not here for your personal stuff, because they're dead. You know what I mean? Like, and I know, because I've heard a few times now that the whole premise of the book is that they found a cure for death, but like, I don't, they didn't touch on that at all. The majority of it was his past and his fears of his mother's death and his what's going to happen and him trying to record the memories. And then the future stuff was super interesting, but it didn't make any sense to me, where he kept stealing stuff from every job he was at, he was on, and he was storing that stuff away in like a barn somewhere. And I don't know, it almost seemed like I don't want to say a communist thing, but like you just go and you volunteer here for a period of time, and then when your services are no longer needed or you want to move on, you go volunteer here for a while. I don't know exactly what's going on, but this was probably one of the more interesting books we've read in a long time, in my opinion.
I agree. The thing about it, Scott Snyder wasn't the primary writer of this. He wrote all the prose sections. Jeff Lemire wrote and drew all the comic parts. And you could tell there's a difference in the writing.
Right.
Which it should be. It's two different types of storytelling, in my opinion.
That, and it's two different writers.
Right.
But to me, the Jeff Lemire portion was interesting, but a little dry until the very end. I kind of got this Frequency vibe from it. Remember that movie where Jake Gyllenhaal, not Jake Gyllenhaal, who's the guy that played Jesus?
Kobe Bryant.
Kobe Bryant or James Caviezel.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Actually, it's a show on WGN now.
Are you thinking of The Passion of the Christ?
Yes. That he did that movie with Dennis Quaid where his dad died and he was on his like ham radio and he started talking and then his dad started talking back to him from beyond the grave. And
I remember that.
It's been like 15 years since I saw the movie.
It was like that movie White Noise with Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
I've never seen that, but I saw Frequency. That's what this reminded me of. It gave me the vibe that at the end when he was, you know, calling out into the ether, he was trying to talk to his mom.
Oh, see, I never thought of it that way. That could be.
That's kind of what I got from it. I liked Scott Snyder's contribution significantly better than Jeff Lemire's. Jeff Lemire's part was good.
Short.
But it kind of just lacked any connective tissue, I guess, for me. Whereas I thought...
See, I thought you wouldn't have liked Scott Snyder's part.
Oh, it's super depressing, but I thought it was probably his best writing in...
Really? Because that one part towards the middle when he's talking about, like, Africa and stuff, I'm like, dude, I'm like, and that dead frog, I'm like, what is this? What? I'm like, I don't get it.
I don't understand what you did.
Am I a moron then?
I thought his writing was really concise and really descriptive and really...
I'll have to go back and read it. Well, I'm just trying to figure out, like, what it has to do with the story. I'm sure it will...
The prose parts were his recollection of growing up and living in fear of his mother dying because her fall. And then all the years I thought, like, oh, she's just falling because she doesn't have enough vitamins and she just needs to up her vitamin D intake and then she's going to be fine. And then she gets pregnant and then things go downhill from there, and I won't give away what happens. But that was it was the thing that they were barely making it because the dad was teaching at like a high school but had like really radical views, so it was causing conflict with his job and he wasn't making much money anyway, and his mother was an optometrist, but she like had her office or her store in a strip mall that was kind of barren.
Right.
And they used to pass the time by doing colored contact fashion shows because they didn't have the customer base to really keep the store busy. Right. So they were always like kind of living hand to mouth, and then after her second fall, the doctors are like, oh, yeah, her vitamins are just off. She just needs to take more vitamins. And then 12 years goes by, or 5 years, or 10 years, however long, goes by. No, it was from the time he was 6 till the time he was like 13. There were no incidents of her falling again. So they thought, oh, maybe it was the vitamin thing. But it turned out she had some serious, like, either some muscular disease or
some brain. Bone degenerative disease.
That's what it was, yeah. It was something, yeah, it was literally something like the muscle tissue was tearing away from the bones, causing her to barely have the strength to exist, let alone stand up or do anything. But yeah, to me, like, that part was really, like, heart-wrenching to read, but it was really good. That's kind of what I got from it, was that he wanted to record as much of his mother's life and his family life as he could, because he always had it in the back of his head that someday, when he least expects it, she's going to go and he's not going to have anything. And this whole after-death thing is him going, well, death has been eradicated, so maybe there's a way for me to get in touch with her again or something. I couldn't tell if it was like everyone's actually just dead and they're living in like this heaven type situation and that's why he thinks he can talk to her again, or if it's just like you said, they found a cure for death. It's hard to tell. I kind of got like the vibe that it could be like an afterlife situation.
See, I don't know. You guys were the ones that were saying that it's the whole cure for death thing. I didn't.
That's what the description said, but that's not what I got from when I read it, because you're talking about a one paragraph synopsis versus like 70
pages.
They're
also saying that they're calling the year 825 AD after death.
Right, and they were also saying like, oh, where are you going for the next cycle? And they were kind of alluding to like cycles are 20 to 30 years. So when that guy was on the farm, he had just completed like a 20 to 30 year cycle of being a farmhand, which is giving me the that's where I got the thing that this isn't exactly like a cure for death. There's like an afterlife kind of vibe here, because I feel like he's collecting these artifacts from these cycles that he's on, because I feel like if the afterlife is infinite, you'd only have to kind of consider the possibility that if your afterlife is infinite, meaning it goes forever,
right?
Over the course of how many years or cycles or where, however time is calculated in that realm, you're going to... how many times do you like sit there and you're like, oh my God, I totally remember that kid from 20 years ago. That's 20 years. And like for 19 of those 20 years, you never thought of this guy. And then all of a sudden you saw like a milkshake sitting on a garbage can. You're like, I remember when he knocked that thing over. Oh my God, what was that kid's name? So if you're thinking in those terms, let's say you're 5, 6, 7 cycles out from your job where you work. Because that's what she said, you know, let's make this goodbye count, because the next time we meet, we may have to reintroduce each other.
Right.
Or reintroduce ourselves. So that's kind of what I thought, like the way time works, somebody who's your best friend 40 years from now, or 3 cycles from now, you won't remember anything about them. You have to like meet them all over again. That's kind of, to me, it's pretty complicated. Not a complicated idea, but it's kind of like a big idea. So there's a lot of avenues to kind of explore, I feel.
Oh, I agree. This is, I think, when it's all said and done, it's going to be probably one of
Image's best books in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. It's kind of unbalanced now, but it's. So it's more than just a standard comic, even like for a maxi issue. So I feel like when it's all over with, I hope there's a big payoff. And I don't mean like, I don't need an explosion or robots or anything like that.
Explosion!
But like some kind of story climax that like ties it all together and makes it feel like this was a big epic story told in a new way. Because I feel like if this succeeds, this could be the future of not only comics, but books in general. Like, they may have kind of hit on something here of combining, like, novelization with comics with, like, an illustrated package altogether. If this thing works, it could be really good for...
Well, I don't think it would. I don't think it's not going to work. I think it's...
Well...
Starting out about as strong as you can.
I would like to cite The People versus 100 Bullets, then. The book that was on fire for like 9 volumes and then kind of sort of fizzled towards the end.
I don't think this is going to be an ongoing thing. I think it's just going to be the 2 or 3 parts and that's going to be it.
No, I know, but I mean, how many times have we like read comics or books going, man, that thing was so good, and then the end was kind of like, eh. True Detective, that's another one. The first season of True Detective, like I said, was really good, and then in the middle it got really good, and then it was really, really good, and in the end was kind of like not befitting of how great everything that was before. It was good. It was satisfying in that it all made chronological sense, but it didn't feel... It felt like a really great song that kind of ended with a dun-dun-dun. It's like, oh, that's it? Like, all this was going on, and you just end it with like a dun-dun-dun-it by Menon.
Wow. Heard. So, all right, I think we've said about enough of this for today. Let's number this and move along. Yes? Yes. Okay. Personally, it's been a few days, but I'm, you know, talking about it, and I know what I thought then. It's about as perfect as you're going to get, but I'm going to give it a 9. I'll figure that I'll start there, and then to be determined, maybe edited, depending the rest of the story.
Yeah, actually, my score is going to seem kind of low then. I'm going to give mine a really strong 8, only because I feel like Scott Snyder's contribution was a little bit more immersive than Jeff Lemire's portion. Jeff Lemire's portion got more immersive towards the end, but like you said, all the stuff on the farm and the artifacts and the barn and all that stuff was kind of like, eh. Because like the writing, Scott Snyder's writing was so like, you're like sitting there like reading every paragraph going, what's going on with his mother? Is she going to be okay? Like I got really invested in her well-being. And then this farm thing is like, oh, there's a cow who keeps burning his face on the fucking electric fence. Yeah, that's great.
Stupid
cow. You're going to be fucking food anyway. So I'm going to give it, I'll give it an 8, but I'm definitely on board for the whole thing. So
yeah, I'm going to go with 8 too.
It's a hefty read.
It is, but I love that.
No, it was really, I was like, when I was looking through it, just kind of like, man, I don't know if I might have to like read some and then bookmark it and finish it tomorrow before we record. But then it was so good for the most of it that I just said, ah, fuck, I'm just going to keep going. And the next thing I know, I finished the whole thing in one sitting. And it was a long sitting, but I finished.
Yeah, I do. It took me a couple.
Well, that's why I read it Tuesday morning when I woke up, so that was perfect for me because I didn't have to put it down and pick it up and put it down. I just made my coffee and was
it was a good solid 40 minutes of sitting there reading.
Oh, yeah. So. No, yeah, absolutely, but it was worth it. I thought the story was fantastic. All righty. So I guess that would kind of explain why we went with the over-under that we did of fears, seeing as though what led him to, you know, a lot of in the story, what led him to live the life he lived was because of his fears of his mother's death. But, so that's, we'll move this into over-under, which, you know. All right, so fears. My overrated is, I feel like, a pretty common fear, but I'm going to go ahead and say the fear of failure. I think it's overrated because, I mean, let's face it, let's be honest, a lot of what you do in life is going to end up being a failure. But I feel like you learn from that, you move on from that, it helps you grow, whatever. Nobody nails it 100% of the time. Everybody fails. I feel like it's nothing to really be afraid of because it's just, it's going to happen. You just got to, you're supposed to learn from it and move on.
I'm the king of failure, so it's like all I do is learn from it.
Actually you don't, because you still play against me in Splendor, and that's just funny.
What?
Nothing.
Yeah, that was awful.
But yeah, that's my overrated, because I know a lot of people like, there's people out there who, you know, will cripple themselves because they're afraid to do anything, because they're afraid to fail. It's like, well, it's not that big a deal. I fail all the time. My whole life is a failure. But I'm just saying, like, I don't know. I feel like it's something that it's a big part of life, and if it's you're going to live your entire life in fear if you're going to be afraid of it.
Sweet. mine is stupid, but whatever. Mine would be rodents. I fucking hate them. I've always hated them. I will always hate them. They are so garbage.
It's overrated?
I mean, it's ridiculous. I admit that. But I absolutely hate those things. I want them all dead. I don't know what purpose they serve. I mean, you could make arguments for most mammals, amphibians, arachnids, a lot of things you can make arguments for, but I can see no argument for rodents other than they are just garbage. So I got nothing.
Well, they are what they eat.
True. I still hate them. I'd still be fine to see them go extinct. They're fucking worthless. I think a lot of it is, though, when I was like 4, we lived in this house on 61st Street, and it was the middle of summer, and I could be imagining this because I was like 4 or 5, but we had this stairway that went down towards the basement in the back of the house, and I forget why I was there, if I was going down there, if I was coming up it, or whatever. There was this gigantic rat. And again, I'm probably imagining that it's much bigger than it actually was. But I remember my dad carrying it to the garbage, and it remember being pretty big. But it ran at me and scared the fuck out of me. And that was the end of that. Like, from that point forward, I was, like, I hated them. So, I actually don't like anything that can, like, come out of nowhere and run super fast. So, I'm not really big on snakes either. But, yeah. Because actually, once when we worked at Polygraphics, I lifted up a big, like, hunk of vinyl, and a snake, like, came slithering out at me. I was like, oh my fucking God! And I threw the vinyl at it and ran away, so... I'm a fucking wuss. I'll admit it. I don't care. I'm 40 years old. I'm going to die in like 10 minutes. So there you go. Rodents. Fucking hate them. They're stupid. And that's why I don't go to the city.
All right. Chris?
Satan.
Ooh, I like it. I didn't even think about that.
He's actually cool.
Well, here's the thing. We went to Catholic school, so we got the whole...
That's what I was just about to say. I was like, dude... Catholic school to always put that fear of him in you. So it's like when you got older and you found out, you're like, you mean I've been afraid of nothing?
Yeah. Oh yeah, they totally fucking pounded into your head that like the devil lived in all your records, lived on your TV shows, and anything you liked was probably influenced by the devil. I remember like I remember one time in like seventh grade science class, rather than do our science assignment for the day, we spent the entire hour, our teacher first like gave us like an 8 or 10 minute lecture about the dangers of Satanism, nothing to do with science, and then she opened the floor up to questions and we were allowed to ask her if something was satanic or not. So we're going like bands we liked and TV shows and almost everything that was awesome. She said devil worship. We're like, and I'm sitting there going, fuck, everything I like is like inspired by the devil. So if I play those records backwards, I'm going to turn into this Satan worshiper. If I watch this movie, I'm going to turn into a Satan worshiper. And then by the end of eighth grade, I had pretty much discovered like Sabbath and Danzig and Testament and Overkill, King Diamond. And I was like, this shit's so awesome. I'm like, there's no fucking way. Even if these people are like going to turn me into a devil worshiper, this is a risk worth taking because Miss Andreonis.
Cooler.
Like, Miss Andreonis, like, whatever, she's not talking me out of King Diamond. Sorry. It just ain't gonna happen. Like, once you start, and then, like, yeah, then you hit high school and you realize, what? This shit isn't Dungeons & Dragons? Oh, that's because this shit is fucking stupid. That's why. Never mind. Devil's, it's not even like the devil's awesome or the devil's not awesome. It's like, the devil's not fucking real. The devil is as real as Saruman or fucking
Santa Claus.
Yeah, or Santa Claus, so. And then you
He's actually cooler. Yeah. It actually turns out that everything that has to do with the devil is actually pretty awesome.
I mean, I definitely get a laugh out of it all. I don't take any of it remotely serious. I don't think anyone should. But, like, no, when you're 12, especially in the 80s.
Oh, I know. Dude, that Slayer Show No Mercy shirt scared the bejesus out of me.
See, what scared me, we had a babysitter. I forget her name now. Lynn, maybe? When we were, like, little. And she was like kind of a like a early stoner headbanger chick. And one time when my parents were going to be out for a long time, she brought a couple of friends over, and they brought some alcohol over, and they brought some records over, and they brought a stack of Ozzy Osbourne records. So my first exposure to Ozzy Osbourne was him on the Diary of a Madman cover, dressed like a werewolf with a big upside down cross behind him, and I'm like, oh my fucking God, he's a devil worshiper. We got devil in the house. And I was, and they were smoking.
Is that the one where he has like jelly coming out of his mouth?
Yeah, and like they were smoking
that
pot.
That cover scared me too. I saw that like when I was in fifth grade, and I was like, dude, I'm like, what are my uncles listening to?
Yeah, like these girls were smoking pot, they were drinking vodka, and they were listening to Ozzy Osbourne, and I'm like fucking scared out of my mind. I'm like, oh God, they let the devil in the house. What the fuck? I'm like 7. I'm a fucking dumbass. And then, like, a year or two later, I'm at my aunt's house, and I see the Black Sabbath Heaven and Hell album cover on the front. And I'm like, angels don't smoke cigarettes. What the fuck? But then, again, then you find out that Dio's pretty awesome, and you're like, oh, never mind. Dio rules. Yeah, but there was, like, so much of that, like, satanic stuff, like, thrown everywhere in the 80s. I think people don't really understand how fucked up the 80s were.
Yeah.
Like, that satanic panic stuff was for real. We got lectured in school several times about dangerous records, about devil worship, about goat. That was one of the things. We were moving, and that's the thing. When I was in 7th, 8th grade, I was still kind of teetering on the edge of, I don't know if this shit's bullshit, might be real. I don't know. I'm a little leery still. Kind of getting over it, but I'm still a little, not ready to jump in and listen to, you know, Possessed right now. Thinking about it, though, because Seven Churches sounds kind of awesome. Just got Venom.
Oh, I have that record.
Yeah, it just gotten Venom, Welcome to Hell. And I remember I saw the back of the thing, and it said Sons of Satan. I'm like, oh, maybe I shouldn't listen to this. And I listened to it. I'm like, oh, dude, I should totally listen to this. This album kicks ass. But I remember we got another lecture in our homeroom class, and my teacher was talking about the whole satanic thing, and she's like, oh, the one place you don't want to go is Tinley Park, because there's, like, devil worship groups all over Tinley Park. I'm like, what? And she's like, oh, there's dog heads outside of Grissom Junior High. And I'm like, sitting there, I'm like, dude, we're moving there in, like, 2 months.
I never heard that story.
So it was Mrs. Bland in eighth grade. She told us the south suburbs was riddled with Satan worship because of the Bastards Grove Cemetery and the Forest Preserves. They all go out there to dance naked and kill babies and eat dog heads and stuff. And
awesome.
And it's the thing, like, when I first moved out here, I'm like, oh, it's a cover-up. It's all, like, nice and serene because there's devil worship everywhere. And then, you know, you meet some of the stoners, and they're way too unambitious to, like, worship anything. They're all, like, fat.
After midnight.
Yeah, like, all the dudes around here were, like, fat 14-year-olds that drank Schlitz and listened to fucking Metallica all day. They didn't have time for devil worship that required, like, leaving the house. They weren't leaving the house to get some bud. They weren't leaving the house. So all that stuff was a myth. And then, yeah, once you fully figure that out, or at least once my dumbass fully figured it out, it was just like, oh, dude, Satan's kind of cool. Check out these riffs. So, yeah.
That Show No Mercy shirt's probably like one of the best Slayer shirts. You have Satan in, like, knight's armor. Wielding a claymore.
Yeah, so I fully cop to having been duped as a, like, impressionable preteen that Satanism was real and rampant when it really wasn't.
So yeah, kids, Satan is actually really cool.
That's the thing, like, kids now, they don't even hear about it. The whole satanic thing is, like, not even talked about anymore. We were bombarded with it.
Well, because, I mean, theoretically, if you believe in Satan, you kind of have to believe in monsters and ghosts and ghouls. It's all falls under the same roof, so they don't push it the way they used to, because people are starting to realize that monsters aren't real. So now they just try to push, you know, Jesus's love or whatever instead of Satan is bad.
No, now it's Jesus would own a gun.
yeah, Jesus loves everyone except the people I hate.
Word.
I can go on, but I don't want to offend anyone, I guess, so.
I think already did. If we offended
Well, anyone. You guys did. I haven't yet, so.
Because it was fucking, looking back, it was so fucking stupid, but at the time, it was, like, deadly, like, I took the shit a little serious, because they fucking, like, tried to scare us with it, like, constantly, for about a good 4 or 5 years. Probably longer, had we been born a few years earlier.
See, I don't remember hardly any of that.
I totally do.
No, yeah, you had different teachers than I did.
I don't know. Maybe it was your grade was a little. I think you guys were like a little smaller of a class size, and definitely there was more tape trading going around in my grade than there was in yours. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah,
because a lot of the girls liked Motley Crue, Poison, Cinderella. So heavy metal was like around the three classrooms that I graduated with. So. I think they felt like, oh, we need to nip this in the bud before they start bringing fucking...
Before they get to high school and start doing it.
Before they start smoking the reefer and having sex on the car.
All right. I guess we'll move on from that one. And, underrated. Now, hear me out before you start rolling your eyes, because I know people are already doing it. My underrated is going to be The Fear of Being Alone. Now, I won't go into too much detail, but Scott here has been single for quite some time now, and I always feel like it's the people that are in relationships that go, yeah, it's not so awesome being with somebody. Being single is awesome, and you should enjoy it while you have it. And I was just thinking about this the other day, because I literally have nothing better to do, and it's all the people who tell me that, you know, being with somebody is not all it's cracked up to be, are always people who are in relationships that they're miserable in. But yet they choose to stay in those miserable relationships because they're so afraid of being alone. Am I right?
Well, I was also
How many people do you... Well, because Brian, of course, he's like me. He's also single. And it's always the people in relationships who tell you it ain't all it's cracked up to be. And they all talk about how miserable they are in their relationships. Why don't you leave then? If being single is so awesome and you are so miserable in your relationship, why are you so afraid to leave?
Well, the other thing I was going to say, a lot of those people that like complain about, oh, you got to do stuff and you got to like talk to her and be nice. The second that person texts and goes dinner, they're like, see ya, leave, and they just leave.
Well, and that's the thing. If that's your biggest complaint, you got to talk to them and do stuff. I am dying to come home to, no offense, I love my dog, but like that's all I come home to. I would love to come home and sit down and have a dinner with a woman, a companion, whatever, a human. But to sit there and say that, oh, you don't need anybody. Like, no, humans as a species need connection. So, and the bottom line is, if you're all going to sit in your miserable relationships and tell me how awesome it is to be single, leave. Be single for more than 5 minutes and tell me it's awesome.
It's really not awesome.
I'm just saying.
I thought I came really close about a week ago. Turns out I didn't nail it.
And here's how I know. People like Chris, this is how I know people like Chris are happy. He's never told me that being single is awesome and I should enjoy it. Because Chris is happy in his relationship. It's always people who are miserable who tell me it ain't all it's cracked up to be. You should enjoy being single. Hey, if it's so great, come fucking join me.
No, dude, I am happy. It's awesome doing nerd type stuff with your companion.
I know. I mean, I'm not saying I've been your best fucking friend forever, but like... You've been on this. We've been doing this show for what, 3 years now? I have never heard you speak ill of your family. Like that's pretty much all you talk about. Like that and music. You know what I mean? Like that sounds awesome to me. I'm sorry that if people are miserable, then you shouldn't have gotten married. You know what I mean? But that's my underrated.
Cause I guess they had. Yeah, I guess they did maybe find someone bad. But
yeah,
it's my guess is it's got to probably be someone that like. Doesn't accept them for who they are is my guess.
I've actually heard people who go out and cheat on their wives, and it's like, well, why did you do that? Well, I can't do this kind of stuff with my wife. Why not? What are you doing?
She doesn't like it in the butt.
It's just degrading. I can't do that to the mother of my child. Why not? The whole purpose of being with someone is to enjoy their company and enjoy your time with them. If that's something you can enjoy together, I mean, I don't care how, whatever. I mean, let's face it, sex is supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be weird. But, I mean, to sit there and say, well, I have to cheat on her because I can't do that stuff with my wife. You're just an idiot.
Then you should just find someone new then.
Right. Exactly.
Well,
I'll get off my high horse.
Break it off.
By that line of logic, no matter who you're with, you're going to find something that you can't do with that person that you're going to go out and find somebody else to do that thing with. So it's not that this person won't do this thing, so I have to cheat on that person with someone else to do that thing. It's just you're always going to find something wrong with the person you're with, and you're always going to find a way to go behind their back. So that's... And here's the thing. In that realm, everybody can find a thing that they would love to do that they can't do because of certain commitments or certain lifestyle restrictions. I would love to rob a bank, but I don't because I don't want to go to prison and get stabbed. So I refrain and I accept the fact that I'm going to be poor for the rest of my life. Probably not really in the same vein, but my point is there are things I'd like to do that I don't do, and I'm never going to do it, and that's okay. So I actually have two then. My first one is obvious if you know me, and that's heights. Fucking, yeah. I'm trying to get over them.
Speaking of which, not to completely cut you off, but
which you just did.
With that virtual reality headset, there is a virtual reality heights app where you walk out on the ledge of buildings. Might be something for you to look into.
No. But, like,
okay.
When my friend got married, he got married on the 39th floor of the Wyndham Hotel, I believe, downtown, which is actually the room where they filmed the dinner scene in The Dark Knight. not important. Kind of important because it was awesome. But they have a terrace overlooking Wacker, and I was like, fuck, man. It's like outside, 39 floors above the street, and I made myself go out there. I made myself walk to the edge. I made myself look down. And, I mean, yeah, obviously I was nervous the first few minutes, but I got used to it, and I was like, fuck, this is so great. And I'm trying to find ways to, like, get over the heights thing, because, I mean, obviously I'm not going to go stand on the roof of the Sears Tower and, like, slide down the side like that one asshole that video did.
Right.
But, and that's the thing. I feel like fear of heights is rational, but it's still, like, something I'd like to at least kind of conquer a bit. And the other one is guns. I don't think people are as afraid of guns as they should be. Because people are like talking about, like, if it was up to me, I'd have six guns on me when I go to McDonald's. It's like, A, you only have two hands. But B, it's just like, dude, the last thing I want is everybody driving around with just guns willy-nilly. I cut a guy off and he goes, I'll fucking show you. I'll shoot you in the face. No, you should have like a serious excessive fear of guns. Guns are not something to be wielding around at fucking Chipotle.
Especially not by every Tom, Dick, and Harry out there.
And I'm not even trying to make this into a guns versus, you know, whatever. I'm just saying, like, if somebody pulled a gun out when I was in the vicinity, I'm going to fucking scream, run, and probably cry. So, there you go. Guns, I'm not a fan, and I'm totally hoping that I can go to my grave never seeing one, like, wielded in public in any sort of maniacal way. Like, if somebody, like, brought me into the house and opened a suitcase and said, ah, here's my gun inside the foam thing unloaded, I'd be like, oh, that's neat. Let's close that now.
Well, and here's the thing, because that's the excuse that everyone will give you, is that they need it to protect themselves. I need it to protect myself. I've been on this planet almost 40 years. You know how many times I've needed a gun to protect myself? Zero.
Well, again, I wasn't trying to make this into a
No, I know. Thing. I know. Just saying, it's
I'm just saying, personally, if I'm in Walgreens and the guy goes, reach for the sky, I would be like, fuck, here's my wallet. I'm going to run. And I would just run. Or if I was in the back and a guy in the front pulled out a gun, I would run through the back and hide.
Like the Hulk, through the wall?
Probably, yeah. I don't trust guns. I don't trust people with guns. I especially don't trust irrational people with guns because I am a wuss.
Christopher?
I don't know what my underrated would be, actually.
What's something that really scares the daylights out of you?
You know what, every time, I don't know why it is, but when I get on a plane, and I'm not afraid of flying, but, like, I'm okay with it, and then, like, I'll come home, and, like, a couple weeks later, I'll watch something, like, on the History Channel or Discovery about, you know, planes, like, plane failure. And I'm like, dude, I'm like, Jesus, man, I'm like, that's gotta be...
Well, see, that's part of the reason why I want to somewhat conquer my fear of heights because I've never been on an airplane. And my 7-year-old nephew has been on an airplane like 3 times now. So I'm like, okay, my nephew is afraid of a lot of things. And I think he's afraid of heights. But yet he's been on an airplane a couple times. And here is his 40-year-old uncle who has never been on an airplane before. Kind of on purpose, but I've never had reason. I guess I've never had reason to get on one. But
I'm going to tell you this. Logan's been on a plane 3 times already, too. And he's only 4.
Yeah, see? That's what I'm saying. Well, I think you could talk a 4-year-old into pretty much doing anything.
Dude, he was on a plane when he was 1. No, even before he was 1. Well, then when he was 2. Actually, Logan's been on a plane 4 times.
All right, then.
That makes sense. Going away, coming back,
twice,
going away, coming back.
Boston, Philadelphia, and he's going to be on a plane again this month. So it'll be 5 times.
So wouldn't that be 10 times? Because one trip there, one trip back?
Yeah, I was just, yeah, you know what I'm saying.
The only plane I've ever been on is the one that's hanging
in Great
the,
America?
No, in the Science of Industry Museum.
Oh, that half, that cut in half, like DC-10 or something?
Yep. So, I mean, it's a plane. It was in the air, I guess. You know, that's nailed it. No?
Actually, you know what? I have a fear. I'll tell you what I have a fear of. Space.
Like, as in outer space?
Yes.
I would love to go to outer space.
I would too, but when you think about it in the grand scheme of things, it's actually kind of frightening.
Well, then I have a VR app for you too. It's probably one of my favorites. It's a tour of the solar system.
It's more frightening because of the fact that, like, if anything happens, like, while you're out there, like, if you're an astronaut working, if you start floating, dude, you're fucked. That's it.
Now, didn't you see Gravity? You could totally pull out of that shit.
Yeah, did you see Gravity?
No.
You should.
I saw Event Horizon, though.
That was fake.
I know, but it was still kind of cool.
I was kidding. I've never seen it.
And speaking of Event Horizon, like, the one part where they, like, actually, like, log into the ship to see what happened, I found out, like, if you do an internet search, like, during that part, like, they actually got, like, the people, like, the crew of that, they got porn stars to do that part.
Why?
Because of what they were depicting. The ship went and, like, basically jumped to light speed, or it went through it created a black hole, it went through a wormhole, and it was supposed to take them somewhere, but it actually ended up taking them to, like, another dimension. It took them to hell. So what they were showing, like, they show it for, like, a brief second, if you ever watched the movie. They show people just basically, like, fucking each other in the ass and ripping each other's limbs and, like, doing things, like, that you would expect in hell. Torture. Physically and sexually torturing.
Neat.
But, yeah, they got porn actors to do, you know, like, obviously do those parts that said.
Interesting.
So... But they only show up for, like, about a hot minute, if not even a minute, like, about, like, 10 seconds, and you see Lawrence Fishburne going, all right, we're out of here. But anyways, yeah, dude, space is – it's really the fact that it's just, like, never ending. Which is kind of scary to me.
Maybe I'll have to put Event Horizon on my short list because I've never seen it.
You ever see it, Brian?
No, isn't that a Paul Thomas or Paul W.S. Anderson movie?
I think it is. I'm not sure who did that, like, if it is his, but I always liked it. I always thought it was cool. I'm cool with anything, like, with Satan and demons in it. And that's Satan in space. So, I'm cool with it.
Alrighty.
Oh, and another thing that I'm afraid of still, or that kind of still freaks me out, the misfit space from The Exorcist.
Nerd.
I think it's cool now, but at the time when I did see it and it popped up like that, it was kind of messed up. You know what part I'm talking about, right?
It's been years since I've seen that movie.
Brian, you know what part I'm talking about, right?
Yes.
Because it just happens in a hot second.
You're a hot second. Speaking of hot second.
And the part where they go, the priest goes to church and he's in church and he's walking up to the altar and, like, the Virgin Mary has, like, dick and balls and, like, thorns coming out of her.
I really need to watch this again. I don't remember any of this stuff.
Again, that was like, I could have sworn that that's what was on it.
Well, alrighty. That was over under. Got to know us a little bit. Just, you know. Don't go scaring us now. So, best thing ever. And, I mean, it's been 3 weeks, so there's been a lot, which is weird for me to say, but I've had quite a few things I could use. But I think I'm going to have to stick with Final Fantasy 15, which, as I had mentioned earlier, came out this week. I've put in about 12 hours so far, and I have to say I was a little nervous when I was watching some of the previews months and months back because I'm like, dude, why aren't they driving cars around? They're like hanging out in cities. Like, this is real futuristic with cell phones and just didn't look right. You know, it didn't have the feel of a fantasy, especially a Final Fantasy game. But, yeah, that quickly goes out the window. This game has blown my expectations
out
of the water.
All that and a bag of chips?
Yeah, abso-fucking-lutely. This game is ridiculous how much I'm enjoying this game. So I don't know what anyone else feels, but I know a few people that have gotten it, Mike being one of them. I believe he wants to get into it pretty heavy and then maybe podcast it. So keep an eye out for that in the near future. If not, keep an eye out for a thorough review by me shortly in the coming week or two. But yeah, if you've ever been a fan of any of the Final Fantasy games or anything, I would definitely recommend checking it out. It is beyond amazing at this point so far.
Mine would actually... This is going to sound weird. Mine is... I don't know if anyone's seen the video. It's kind of gone super-duper viral in the last couple days. last Wednesday in Lakeview at the Michaels department store, or the arts and crafts store. This woman who has been since labeled the Linkin Park Trixie went on a super long quasi-racist rant in the middle of the store that another woman took her cell phone out and filmed 10 minutes of and posted online, and now the whole world has seen this woman screaming at these employees of Michaels, calling them animals and all kinds of racist bullshit. Well, turns out the woman that filmed the video launched a Kickstarter to kind of give the woman who was screamed at a little bit of a Christmas bonus, and they far exceeded the goal. They wanted to raise like $600. They ended up raising $25,000, which is pretty awesome. But it turns out that the woman that did that also did it about 4 months ago at a Pete's Coffee House in Lincoln Park or in Wrigleyville, and she was screaming at the barista behind the counter, calling him all kinds of homophobic epithets, and yelling and screaming, "I make $90,000 a year! You're a barista!" So she's screaming about something, and people that saw that rant said, yeah, we don't even know why she was mad. She just started screaming at everybody in the store. So this woman has a history of screaming at people and yelling at employees because she makes $90,000 a year. Well, it turns out she doesn't have a job anymore, and now the company that she worked for essentially said, like, that they want nothing to do with her ever again, and they disavow her having ever worked there, et cetera, and so forth. And this woman is, like, becoming infamous now, so something tells me her comeuppance is coming in a huge way. I shouldn't cheerlead stuff like this, but this woman is the worst. So it's pretty funny to watch her, because she was ranting and raving about, oh, were you going to put me on YouTube? Well, yeah, apparently. Now she's world news. So, yeah, pretty rad.
This is the first I'm hearing about this.
Are you serious? It's been all over the internet since Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I haven't been to work.
But that was
been on the computer since the day before.
I've been so fascinated by this story. I've been following it every day to see if they find out who this, because right now they don't know who this woman is. They've been calling her the Linkin Park Trixie because they didn't have a name for her. But slowly but surely, they found her LinkedIn profile. They haven't released her name yet, but they found out she worked for Cedars-Sinai Hospital, and she was fired back in September, so that was her former $90,000 job, which she no longer has. So it's just weird because, like, I don't know if you know who Tommy Lauren is. She's this, like, super right-wing talk show host on The Blaze. She's 24, and she's already got, like, 15 million Facebook followers, and she's, like, super crazy popular. And she doesn't do anything other than just scream at the camera about, you know, how you should, like, love America and Donald Trump rules or whatever. But it seems to be this, like, trend of, like, 20-something women who are, like, super mad and borderline racist, and they're just starting crap everywhere they go. So to see this woman get her comeuppance is, like, super satisfying to me because I'm getting really annoyed by these, like, rich girls from the suburbs who are like, I'm 25, I should make six figures and yell at people because I'm better than everyone. And then when they start getting racist and belligerent, they get, you know, put on YouTube, which is kind of awesome. I'm into it. So take it down a notch, ladies. That sounded horrible if you put that in a soundbite.
Yeah.
Take it down a notch, overprivileged white ladies with money. I don't know. Never mind. I just back myself right into a hole. But yeah, that video rules because she's totally done now. The video sucks, but she sucks. So anyway, that's enough.
And Christopher.
That's actually pretty cool. Dude, I'm just watching this thing right now that says the top 10 scariest moments in movies or something like that. And they're showing, like, parts of these movies. I forgot what number this is, but this movie, Drag Me to Hell, she's, like, hearing footsteps and, like, and they get to the door and it's two hooves. That's so awesome. That kicks ass, dude. I want to open the door and say, come on in. Let's listen to Slayer. It'd be awesome. I open up the door and there's Satan looking like a goat. And he's, like, banging the heavy metal. He's like, dude, put on some Venom and let's get some chicks over here.
You would say that. You'd probably start crying.
Yeah, probably. But still would be kind of cool.
If You were crying in front of the devil.
No. Well, all right then. I guess that is going to wrap us up for the week. So don't forget to... it's going to be Brian's pick, actually, next week. So, as always, we'll try to tweet out what Brian's pick's going to be, but Lord
hey,
knows.
It's really my pick, dude. I'm after Damien.
Oh, my God, you're right. I have to update my sheet then. Wait a minute. Well, it doesn't matter. We'll try to tweet it out by the in the next couple of days if Chris doesn't know it by now. And then don't forget to follow me on Twitter at XhorseandX. You can follow Brian at Pure Rock Fury. You can follow Chris at SkateXEdge. And you can find us all on Facebook at Facebook.com/ReviewAndRoast. And have a good week.